This is a Stimulus Network podcast.
Hello and welcome to Season 5 of the Spooktator Podcast. I'm Hayley Stevens, and this is the podcast which examines the stranger elements of life, society, international culture, and the media. As always, I'm joined for this episode by Paul Gannon and Charlie Revel-Smith.
Hello.
Hello, everyone. Good evening.
Good morning as well, just in case.
Good afternoon,
whenever you're listening to this.
You can find links to the things we discuss in this episode at www.spooktator.co.uk, where you'll also find ways to contact us, subscribe to the show, or follow us on social media. We are back from our break, better and badder than ever before. Obviously, it begs the question, what have you bitches been up to since we last gathered round this cauldron?
Bitches, hang on. It's a bit strong, isn't it? Jeez. All right.
Start strong, start as you mean to go on.
Well, the answer's nothing.
Really?
I mean, the same
That's
old shit.
That's kind of sad.
No cheap show and Digitizer, that keeps going, so that keeps me busy.
Yeah.
You did a live show, didn't you, with Digitizer?
Oh, yeah, we did. We did a massive show in Harrow, 500 seats sold out. It was a weird show. It's like a kind of pantomime gone wrong.
Good for you, then. I'm back into doing, writing another Weird Bristol book, this one, More Weird Bristol. I'm going away to America this week for 3 months, so I have to get everything in place for how my book is actually going to be written while I'm out there. It's a really strange way of going about it, but it is how I've done it several times before, actually. So, yes, I should still be around to record while I'm out there. But, yeah, it just has meant that I've actually been working pretty hard to get everything in place for the book, which hopefully will be coming out in November.
Awesome.
I don't know. I don't know about you, Hayley, but all I heard there was, oh, I'm going to America. Charming, isn't it?
Rub it in our face. A lot of that. Well, I'm going to Lancashire.
Ooh. I'm sorry.
Doesn't quite have the same ring to it, but I'm still quite excited. I'm going to be speaking at the Lapis Paranormal Conference on the 9th and 10th of November. And so in the break that we took, I've been working on my talk a lot because I'm doing a brand new talk called The Trials and Tribulations of a Real Life Ghostbuster, which is mainly about the weird things I've experienced that I could explain. And then those that I couldn't explain, what I've learned over the years and so on. I've also been learning how to drive. I've had 5 lessons. I'm having my 6th lesson soon. I'm really enjoying it. Driving a car, going around corners. I've been going at like 40 miles per hour, guys.
Ooh, that was the fastest I ever got up to in my lessons. I don't think I ever went beyond 6, I don't think, because basically by about the 3rd lesson, I saw no improvement in myself whatsoever.
Really?
And I was just so frustrated with myself. I felt so stupid as well. And I would also finish lessons and be physically in pain because I was so tense behind the wheel.
I found that. So I've been like forcing, like for the first few, I've forced myself to relax my shoulders.
Yes.
So made a big difference.
I just couldn't take it anymore. I was like, this is not worth the license at the end of it. I was dreading it all week long. That's how much I hated it.
Oh, that's not good. No. I'm really looking forward to my next lesson. I'm really enjoying it.
Good. We'll go for it then.
Yeah. Hopefully it continues like that. I also, in August, I went to Glasgow and Edinburgh, and I went on the Mackenzie Poltergeist Ghost Tour with the City of the Dead tours. And that's the one where you get to go into the Covenanter's prison, which is normally locked up, and you get to go into the Black Mausoleum and they tell you all about the stories. And I was really disappointed because it was a really interesting tour happening during the Fringe. There's a great vibe going on in the city anyway. And you get to go into this normally off-limits place. And then as you're in the Black Mausoleum being told about all the horrible things that might happen, some guy in a mask jumps out and screams at you.
Yeah.
And
I hate it when they feel that they have to do that.
You're sure it's just not a local?
And I'm sure that everybody else saw him too, so I know he's definitely real. And they have a key to unlock it and lock the gates behind you. So the only people that gain access are the tour group and the tour staff, the people running it. So he was planted, and it was well timed by the tour guide. And yeah, that was really disappointing because City of the Dead Tours, who run those, they do two tours, one of which is the graveyard tour. They big it up to be like the most active poltergeist. People get attacked all the time. It's really, you know, the way they build it up is as though it's a real thing, and then they kind of cheapen it with that, which is a real shame.
I don't know why the compulsion to do things like that. The stories and like the atmosphere setting should be enough.
Yeah, it was great actually to be there, to be at this place that has this legend attached to it, and to hear about the gruesome history, and to hear just even secondhand what people say they've experienced there. That was great. And then, even though I don't necessarily believe that people really have been pushed and shoved, I believe they might think they have, and that it might go cold when people are in there and so on. But to then have it cheapened like that, it made me feel disappointed whilst I've stood there. But it also made me wonder what else had been fabricated or played on by the tour guide, that, you know, how much could you actually trust of what he was saying? And I suspect not a lot, actually.
I remember, strange enough, going on to asking somebody for recommendations in Edinburgh for ghost tours, because there were so many of them. And the woman behind the desk, this was actually in the hotel, was like, there are still ghost tours out there trying to say that Greyfriars Bobby, you know, the dog in the graveyard, yeah, that was a real thing. So it's like, you need to avoid those ones.
I mean, to be fair to them, when you go around the kirkyard, because obviously that's where the Mackenzie Poltergeist is, and Greyfriars Bobby is, they're in the same location, basically just a couple of yards away from one another. And they take you to the Bobby tombstone, and they tell you the story, and then they tell you that it's not real, and the kind of
it's absolutely fine doing it like that. In fact, I think there's actually some, it shows some integrity if you're going to tell the stuff which is known to be just a legend or a story.
And then the guy in the mask jumps out in the Covenanter's prison and just ruins the whole kind of integrity of it, which is such a shame.
Do you think that's more for like the out of towners, the people who don't really care about veracity and just want to have a spooky night out?
I think so. But I also, from the crowd that was there, there were probably about 24, 25 of us. We all paid £15 each, I think it was. And there was some people there. I was the only person on my own. I was kind of like reading the crowd a little bit, and as you walked around, and I got the feeling that some of them were really interested in the paranormal, and they were there because they were kind of believers, a bit like people who go to psychic shows. And there was actually a family of four, and the dad in the family, he was genuinely scared, to the point that when you go into the Black Mausoleum, they tell you to move back. And so you're right at the back of the mausoleum, and you can, the tour guide stands near the door and tells you the stories, blah, blah, blah. And this guy from this family did not want to move away from that door. He was terrified to even come inside. And then, unfortunately, because of the way the place is set out, when the guy in the mask jumped out, it was right in his face. So
to put into consideration actual people's health as well. That guy could have a heart condition for all they know.
Well, yeah, I mean, they do have a disclaimer where they say this isn't for people who have heart conditions, and if you're easily scared, this may not be the tour for you. So they do cover themselves on that front.
Fair enough.
And quite jokingly, the tour guide was saying things like, "If one of you guys gets attacked, it's just you for yourselves. I'm out of there. You might be able to catch up with me. I might have the gates open by the time you catch up with me," and that kind of thing. So it was quite tongue in cheek, but also a lot of stuff was presented as fact, and I felt that there was some blurred lines between what they really believed and what they were kind of playing on. But
2 out of 10.
I would say four out of ten, maybe.
Oh, 4 out of 10.
I'm being generous there as well.
Next week on Hayley Rates.
Say that carefully.
I know. I really had a lot of difficulty getting that out there.
Well, one thing we can always count on is that there will be paranormal research groups out there who are prepared to push the boundaries, so shall we say, of what many people think of as taste and decency. One such thing which came to our attention towards the end of last month was an online paranormal research group known as Project Reveal Ghosts of Britain. Now, these are a popular Facebook, and they also have a YouTube presence as well, but mostly it's a Facebook group. And it was actually via this Facebook group where they also host live streams of investigations and, of course, discussions and commentary while it's going on and that sort of thing, as you would expect from...
You know, before we go any further, I just want to state that all the best things start on Facebook groups, don't they? All the most positive rallying calls for justice
absolutely
happen.
Absolutely. There and Twitter.
Yes.
Twister? No, ignore, edit out.
No, the film Twister is...
I love the game, really brings people together and then you end up in a fight, yeah.
Actually, the game Twister and Twitter are very similar and both people just get wrapped up in themselves arguing over the toss of pointless nothingness. I'm sorry.
Very nicely done.
Edit all this out. No. My brain went completely to shit then.
Absolutely not editing that out.
Great. Sorry.
Okay, well, it was towards the end of August when this Facebook group announced that their next investigation was going to be concerning Myra Hindley. Now, Myra Hindley was one half of the Moors murderers who, during the 1960s, killed at least five children and became pretty much, if you imagine that, like the living embodiment of a boogeyman, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
Of just in British culture, the pair of them are just will forever be seen as monsters.
Absolutely monsters.
For want of any other better word. And because of this, I don't think that they were prepared, this paranormal research group, I don't think they were prepared for how instantaneous and angry the backlash would be, including among their own fans. In fact, it was a large percentage of people who had been members of the group already were essentially saying, this is not on, you can't be flippant about something like this. And remember, at this point, they'd actually only announced the name of what this next investigation was going to be, and it simply was the Myra Hindley written in spooky text, I think, on like backdrop of some woodlands or something like that. But people appreciated it at once for what it at least had the potential to be, and that was extremely tasteless and insensitive. And I think that they completely underestimated the public's reaction to those murders in particular. There is something which is sort of like it's in the British psyche in some way. People forget that before that time in the 1960s, kids were told that if you got lost, you went and approached a woman because she would look after you. So actually having this woman actually being playing a role in and, you know, luring these kids in, potentially actually playing an active role in killing them.
Yeah.
It changed everything. It changed such huge public opinions. So this group countered by saying that they weren't planning on contacting the murdered children or Myra Hindley herself, you know, in an afterlife form. And in fact, they also went about, which is never, it's never a good sign, but they went and deleted almost all critical posts which were opposing them. And then went on to call those people trolls and haters, which I always think those words do actually have some meaning, especially online. It isn't just people who disagree with you or thinking you're doing something immoral. Sometimes you do actually have to listen to criticism. But anyway, this group itself has claimed to have been reached out to by a woman with a personal connection to the crimes. And there wasn't really much further specified at the time. So come 3rd of September, and despite all this criticism, the live stream went ahead, and watching it, I didn't actually watch it live, I watched it a little while afterwards, I was shocked not just how tacky it was, but also how utterly credulous the hosts themselves were
What was the eventual format then? What did they go with? Was it
the eventual format which I believe it seemed to be very different to what they would usually do. But this mostly took the form of an interview with this woman who was called Gemma. And yes, this is a woman who claims to have a connection to the murders. So about two thirds of it was just an interview about her, her experiences, what her connection to the murders were. And then it went off the deep end in the last section of it. So Gemma was along for the live stream, and she claims to have married into the family of John Kilbride, who was a 12-year-old boy who was the second of the Moore's murder victims. Now, there seems to be a fair bit of controversy online about this woman herself, that, and I haven't been able to actually find any validation that she really even was married into the family. But the family themselves have definitely made some statements claiming that she is not to be trusted and is essentially a compulsive liar. And there's also, there have been claims of criminal history, and some of which has been supposedly violent. But her main part of this story is that she claims to have been haunted by a demon. And in fact, one of the spiritualist mediums who was along in this group claimed that this demon was the same one that had possessed Myra Hindley and caused her to do these crimes, which I always think is such.
Was the psychic a big fan of Twin Peaks? Because it sounds like she's just doing Bob from Twin Peaks in that case.
Right, yes, yes. I always think it is such, it's such a tasteless thing to do, because it takes all responsibility away from the actual person who's done something and said, oh no, it's not their fault. They were possessed. It was the fault of this demon. So at this point, it was like, we look at multiple forms of exploitation, because this woman, Gemma herself, I don't think is, she, from at least some of the reading I've been doing online, seems to actually be quite vulnerable in a lot of ways as well. So within this show, which was, I think, about an hour and a half long, it just felt like they were piling them on and on and on, all these different types of exploitation. And then at one point in the show, they reveal this woman's biggest connection to the to Myra Hindley, more so than even supposedly having married into the Kilbride family. She claims to have at least some of the ashes of Myra Hindley. Now, her story behind it is that she was given some tip-off where they were and where they were being kept. And she was a Wiccan at the time. And and so she was hoping that she would be able to bind Myra Hindley to Earth and, in her own words, prevent her from ever going to heaven if she could do this binding spell.
Fuck me, this sounds like The Conjuring 5.
This is insane.
And she now claims that because of this, whichever demon it was which had possessed Myra Hindley is now targeting her and her son, who she has a young son as well.
This sounds so messed up.
They bring out the ashes towards the end, and then they essentially leave it open to the audience about what they should do with them. They want to get rid of them in some way, but they don't know the kind of spell that you would cast or what process you would go through to get rid of this demon, essentially.
They need to get Fred Bat in. He'll help them.
Oh, yeah, Fred Bat would be a good one to go for.
Literally the throwing water onto a fiery pan solution, isn't it?
Well, you know, in for a penny.
Yeah, let's watch it all burn, Hayley. It's not a bad idea. The thing is, from what I'm hearing here, it's like, this is that kind of weird, horrible crossover between the paranormal world and, like, true crime fanatics, like, because there's a mystery still at the bottom of this story, the missing bodies and things like that, there's this compulsion for people to go, oh, well, I have a touch with the spirit world, I can speak to the dead, I can help solve a crime, or put myself into the story in some way. And when people put themselves in the story
I want to make this story about me somehow. I want to actually feel like I have some first-hand contact with it. And that possibly could be true of this this woman who claims to have the ashes. But I think it can be true of a lot of people who are part of these paranormal groups who intentionally go looking for sensationalist, famous criminals and crimes in research. And I think that there is a big difference between, say, going after Jack the Ripper, where all of the people who nobody remembers his victims personally, but going and doing like a tacky Facebook live stream where you are looking into a serial killer whose victims, the families of their victims, are still alive and still have the potential to be incredibly damaged by stuff which you could come out with, I think, unfortunately, is part of a trend towards the kind of over-sensationalizing of things. And there's just a couple of other things which I came up with, and that of examples of this, and one of them being Madeleine McCann's parents are still being inundated by people claiming that they can get in contact with their missing daughter. There was an American TV show which ran for only one season, but it's called Paranormal Home Inspectors. And this one actually involved ghosts of people really recently deceased, of people who had been murdered 3 or 4 years ago. One of them was someone who died in a car crash just a few years back. And I think that is, and also the last one I had to put on the list was everything Zach Baggins has ever done.
Yeah.
Because it's just masked in this.
Can I just quickly throw in the Derek Acora of Michael Jackson seance?
Which, God, I forgot that. Yes.
I bleached my brain of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Fancy that being the tasteful version of this story we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because I think that he was barely even cold at the time when it was announced, wasn't he?
Well, there's sense of like distance that we put between like the Titanic tragedy and Jack the Ripper, and that it's so far away it doesn't matter anymore. But then like the other argument would be, well, why hasn't there been a story like this for Fred and Rose West? Why, you know, have there been stories? Or is that just a matter of time now that I've said it loud and it's now in the cosmos?
Yeah, you've put some ideas out there into people's heads.
Well done, Paul.
Thank you. There is a degree of time in which passes, and there are some people who think, well, it's all right to dig into this and actually not show it an enormous amount of respect because it's, well, in this case, over 50 years ago, whereas I think Fred and Rose West was closer to 20 years, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of seems about right. So there probably will come a time where people are like, well, enough time has passed. We can actually really...
There is, I think, a difference, though, in that the murders and the crimes committed by the Wests were primarily in their home. Obviously, Fred West, there were other victims who were buried elsewhere too. But that house was demolished. And although the site is still there, I think it's a reflection garden you can go in and sit in, like a memorial. Although that site is still there, the house is not. Whereas with the Ian Brady and Myra Hindley murders, their victims were buried on the moors. The moors are still there. There are this very spooky, atmospheric, open land, which can feel quite remote. I think possibly that probably lends itself to people who are attracted to ghost hunting, who are looking for that thrill, who are looking to be almost like adventurers. And going back to what you said about the true crime crossover, I think that there definitely is some sort of link there, because from experience, you know, I've been investigating the paranormal since 2005, and I've encountered a lot of ghost researchers over the years. And a lot of them, they take on almost like these superhero sort of personalities in a way, because they see themselves as people who have this knowledge, well, which is probably wrong knowledge, but they think that because they've got this knowledge about the paranormal, they can go and help people, and they can be these heroic figures, and they can be these detectives who solve these problems and these mysteries, but also these like demonic problems or these bad problems that people are having, they can swoop in and save the day. And they think they're doing the right thing, but actually they're not. They're doing something really, really awful.
But then again, that goes back to the whole idea of people inserting themselves into the tragic history of other people.
Absolutely. And
this whole thing on this thread. Again, I didn't see it. I pointed you guys in the direction of it, I remember, but I literally couldn't put myself through it. But
no, me neither.
The very fact that someone would think that would be entertainment and beneficial and nothing other than just a little bit scurrilous is just a bit pathetic.
And that's where it kind of gets weird, because yes, people take on these savior roles as ghost hunters, but very rarely do they do it as a Facebook Live event or in a public, such a public way. It's normally done behind closed doors. And although that in itself is problematic because the people they're encountering probably have underlying issues that are causing the strange things that they're experiencing and reporting, at least it's still private in a way. And it's not being broadcast for the world to see.
And it's not so blatantly there for the purpose of entertainment if it's actually kept mostly in private.
Yeah.
Most people tend to write up what happened, but it's not quite the same as actually doing a live stream, is it?
No.
There was actually a follow-up discussion which they had. It was just the three of them talking. Again, an hour and a half long, and I couldn't bring myself to go through that. But I think that they were at least attempting to explain themselves through that and answer some of the questions.
There are more and more instances of ghost researchers, or ghost hunters, I should say, doing these live streams. And I think there are some real ethical implications here, because when you're dealing with cases involving members of the public, really anybody who's doing an ethical investigation into paranormal phenomena should be anonymizing the people involved and should be anonymizing the location that it's happening at too. And it really draws up some real quandaries, some real potential for harm, especially when people are talking about demonic sort of hauntings, and you kind of then get into the realm of exorcisms and possession and so on. And if this was a case that I had been presented with, I would be really reluctant to become involved. Not because, oh, it's a demon, but because there's probably something else going on.
Yeah, you could actually be damaging somebody who actually has...
Absolutely.
Who actually needs to get help rather than be told that they really do have a demon going after them.
Yeah.
But there's also this whole issue of... If they obviously don't do research, because if they'd done a little bit of research on this woman outside of a cursory contact and a couple of emails, they might have said, we're not touching this with a barge pole because it could, you know what I mean? Just the basic thing, we can't do this. But they looked at it and thought, this is an excuse for us to grow an audience on our Facebook group, which is what it's all about, because it's all about feeding social media.
It is.
So yeah, while it's not like a TV show or a movie of the week, it's these pockets of social media that grow, feeding this kind of shit to each other to make themselves feel like they're an important part to the community.
And ultimately, there are two possibilities. And one is that they did it on purpose, knowing that they weren't exploiting. That's a strong word, but I think it's the right word. So either they knowingly exploited that situation to gain social media attention, which they have got, congratulations, or they unknowingly did it, in which case they're making really bad decisions without thinking them through.
Yeah.
And that's not good. Neither of those is a good indication.
Yeah, neither of them says good things about them
as a
professional organisation.
Yeah.
To me, it just says that they think themselves as supernatural edgelords, and I'm just like, I'm totally not into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the sort of impression which I got as well.
Me too.
Because you know when they react... When the reaction's always like, whatever, haters, whatever, come at me, you just think, you are literally emotionally incapable of having a discussion about this.
Yeah, if you're not listening to what people's actual gripe with you is and you're just deleting them and then calling them haters afterwards, it means that you're not giving it the gravity that it actually, or the gravitas that it actually needs.
Yeah, and ultimately, I don't know who these people are. I've never heard of them before. So for them to label people who are criticising them as haters is kind of a huge assumption on their part that any of us care enough to hate them.
With all this said, I do often go through the comments on my SoundCloud and YouTube channels and delete the negative ones. So I get it. I'm just as contradictory.
But there is a degree where over on, you know, places where you have a social media presence, you're not doing anything which is in any way as, as controversial as this. And there are some people who are just bastards out there who actually enjoy just saying mean things. But that is different to people who are genuinely criticizing people because they think that they've made a mistake in their ethics. And I unfortunately think it's only going to get worse. That if there is a spread of more of these online paranormal teams, which aren't held with the same, you know, there are regulations that if you're going to be making something for television, which you need to abide by, it's almost going to become like, you know, like the Edinburgh walks that we were talking about. There become so many of them that in order to stand out, you need to be the most outlandish one. So maybe there is going to be someone who goes and does Fred and Rose West, who knows? But it's not a good precedent these people have set.
As an internet campaign called Storm Area 51 has nearly 2 million people pledging to break into a highly secure military base later this month in the hopes of uncovering possible secrets about UFOs, a recent Gallup poll found that 2/3 of Americans believe the government knows more about the subject than it has let on. This comes at a time when the US Navy recently gained a lot of attention when it issued new guidance for personnel about reporting unexplained aerial phenomena after a spate of unusual sightings by pilots, which we discussed in a previous episode. Gallup reports that the 68% today who believe the government is withholding information about UFOs is comparable to the 71% found to believe the same in 1996. Both times, the results were very similar among all main demographic groups, including by age, education, and political party identification. However, it appears that only about half the number who think the government is hiding something about UFOs think it is covering up information about alien space landings specifically, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, I think I would probably have to put myself in that category then, because there are weird things in the sky that the US government doesn't want the general public knowing about, because it's things that they invented themselves.
Yeah. The results of the polling also indicated some other interesting things. For example, 33% of US adults believe that some UFO sightings over the years have in fact been alien spacecraft visiting this planet from other planets or galaxies. So that's just over a third believe in the ET hypothesis. On the other hand, the majority of people, around 60%, are sceptical, saying that all UFO sightings can be explained by human activity or natural phenomena, while another 7% stated that they were not sure. And 16% of Americans who were polled say they have personally witnessed something they thought was UFO, while the vast majority, about 84%, haven't. It's really encouraging, I think, that the majority who were questioned were kind of being rational and offering up alternatives for UFO sightings, indicating that Greg and Dana Newkirk were likely not included in the population of this study.
Oh, burn.
Ooh, wow.
Zing.
Ouch. Someone just got roasted.
Feel the heat coming off their laptop there.
Of those who were involved, 56% believe that those who spot UFOs are seeing something real and not just imagining it. And that statistic is up from 47% from the 1996 Gallup poll. And Gallup suggests that it's possible that this is a reflection of the public awareness of military testing and the proliferation of drones, which people may think can be mistaken for UFOs. So they're suggesting that the more we become aware of the alternatives that people might be seeing in the skies, the more we realise that actually they're not just making up or being crazy.
Yeah, that's what they want us to think now, yeah. And they're working.
Interestingly, though, and something which aligns a lot with what you were just saying, Charlie, and with what we discussed when we spoke about the US Navy protocol news, a third of those who were interviewed believe that the government know more than they're letting on, but don't think it's nefarious, and indicated they might believe officials are keeping quiet because unidentified sightings could unnecessarily alarm the public, or because refuting UFOs would require disclosing sensitive military information, which completely makes sense. I think I also fall into that category.
For a long time there's been speculation that various US governments over the decades, they have not gone out of their way to disprove the UFO hypothesis, because it actually is quite a good cover for things which they might actually be doing. I know that sounds very conspiracy theorist, but there is, you know, Area 51 is a military base, so I'm assuming that stuff is being developed there. So if you've got people claiming that it's flying saucers, then it's perhaps it's better cover for actual technology you might be developing yourself.
Separate from possible space landings on Earth, about half of Americans who are polled, 49%, think that people somewhat like ourselves exist elsewhere in the universe. And even more, 75%, believe that some form of life exists on other planets. Worth noting as well is that in the 1996 poll, 10% of respondents said they had no opinion on this subject, whereas now that figure sits at just 2%, wow. Which suggests to me that UFOs really are still quite a hot topic.
Well, do you know, like in the past they'd say, oh, humanity's not ready for first contact and all this stuff. Do you think we're ready now? Do you think if the government
went,
there's an alien in our garage, you want to see it?
I do think people are ready. I think so much is happening in the world, and the way that we're exploring space and, you know, the Mars projects and so on, I think people would be ready.
I always thought the argument that we would all freak out to begin with was always a bit of a weak one. That I think that people would be, there would be some people being alarmed, there would be a lot of people be very excited, but I think overall we would kind of just adjust to it, wouldn't we? If we were being visited by aliens?
Isn't the big worry about religion? People going, oh, it'll throw religion into a cock hat because it will prove this, that, and the other wrong. And it's like, well, they'll adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that the Catholic Church is one of the few religious organisations that has actually come out and said that if there was alien life out there, it makes no difference at all to the biblical story. They are just...
I thought you were going to say it makes no difference at all to the usual bullshit we peddle.
I think their claim was along the line that it is just animal life, but just in space. Yes, or maybe they were like his early attempts or something like that.
Or like when Captain Kirk met God in Star Trek V, The Voyage Home. No, it's
or
not.
When Bender met him in Futurama.
That's true. I love that episode.
It's a great episode.
I always love it, though, when Gallup and other polling companies do these sorts of polls, because it's a really good way of kind of keeping track of trends and public opinion and general opinions on weird things. And I found this really interesting, that compared to the 1996 poll, when you consider everything that's happened with the advancement of technology and the recent news with the Navy protocols in America and so on, that beliefs and attitudes seem to be the same. And
yeah, they stay pretty steady considering that.
Yeah, it's that really interests me.
Well, I just want to end by saying that it's Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, and not The Voyage Home. Okay. If I leave it like that dangling, people will complain, and I hate that.
I also think 96 might have been an unusual time as well, because it wasn't, we sort of into peak X-Files at that time.
And Independence Day.
Yes, of course. And they believed that there was actually like an uptake in belief, or at least interest in alien life around that period of time. So we might just be looking at two anomalies in history.
I was 9 years old back then, so I don't really remember the films.
All right, well, rub it in.
God, you thought I was bragging about going to America.
So what, you're young. Have you not seen Citizen Kane or Wizard of Oz? Eh? Just because you're young doesn't mean you have a right to not see things.
No, I've seen those films. I just don't recall, oh, that was 96.
Yeah, you probably weren't aware of there being, you know, that much. And I think that the same thing happened over here. I think we just saw a spike in general interest in aliens.
Well, wasn't it also the same time of the alien autopsy video, or was that like...
Ah, yes, that was around about that time. When would that have been?
I mean, I can't remember all the details now, because I'm too young to remember dates.
Oh, whatever. You know what I mean.
Alien autopsy, it was 1995.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, we were like...
And not the Anton Deck movie of a similar name.
I actually quite liked that film.
I quite liked it. Yeah,
that was 2006 that film came out. This has been another episode of the Spooktator podcast. Remember, you can find links to everything we've discussed at spooktator.co.uk, where you can also find links to our social media accounts and the different ways that you can subscribe to the show if you would like to. Guys, before we go, do you have anything that you would like to share?
It's the same old stuff for me. Weird Bristol on Twitter and Instagram for your fix of unusual stories from Bristol history.
And I'm at Paul Gannon Show on Twitter, and you can see me doing digitizer stuff weekly on YouTube or cheap show stuff in your ears with a podcast.
I would just like to plug that the Lapis Paranormal Conference is fast approaching. It's happening from on the 9th and 10th of November in St. Anne's in Lancashire. You can find details at lapisparanormal.com. That's L-A-P-I-S paranormal.com.
And Hayley will be signing autographs outside.
Well, no, I would find that really awkward to have to sign an autograph. I once got asked if someone could have a photograph of me because they recognised me, and I honestly felt like curling up and crying. It was just so okay. Awkward.
In that case, anyone listening who goes to Lapis, don't ask for a photograph with Hayley. Just take one from a far distance away when she doesn't know she's looking.
Everyone prefers that.
Yeah, everyone prefers that.
No.
Sorry.
We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, remember, spooky is in the eye of the beholder.